Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. I am Larry Mueller. My guest today, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator. Always fun to have her along, and here she is again to answer your questions. So I hope you'll join in if you have some. And we can talk, as I mentioned, we can talk about the flowers, we can talk about the vegetables, the trees and the shrubs, the lawns, and give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call. Lisa, nice to have you back.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Now, we had a little rain. Some parts of the state got
a little more than a little.
More than 4 or 5 inches. Madison area got about a half inch. And so for those areas with a half inch, I mean, it's all welcome, but it's not the savior.
No, it's not quite what we were looking for, but we'll take what we can get.
Yeah, we sure will. Have you? And I tell you what, the plants have been undergoing a lot of stress. Things looked pretty stressed out there. Even trees are looking a little stressed.
Right. And the secret to that is water, 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 mulch, mulch, mulch.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're asking people that call in at the office and say that their trees are losing leaves or are looking stressed, particularly those that they planted this year or last year, to keep watering those on a regular basis and try and mulch over the root system, making sure to keep the mulch probably 3 or 4 inches away from the trunk is a good ballpark figure.
You know, where we live, we have about 4 feet down, you're going to hit water. There's a water table. And we have a birch, and we haven't watered that birch. And it looks pretty good. And I'm wondering if the roots can get down that far to get to the water at that water table.
About 90% of the root
right
system
the
is, yeah, in the top 12 inches. But you may have a little bit of upward capillary action or something that's pulling that up there. Most of the birch trees that I've been seeing have not looked so good. Do you have yours mulched?
No.
It's got grass underneath it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're lucky then.
Yeah, it looks healthy.
I'm guessing that's probably the reason, your high water table.
Well, the high water table, yeah, because I've seen a lot of really
sickly looking trees of all kinds.
Elizabeth and Eau Claire, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Elizabeth. Thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
I've been trying to find the name of a plant that's got a beautiful flower on it, but I've had it around pretty much 65 years, and it may be older than that. We've transplanted it from garden to garden. I've never heard it called anything but Golden Glow. But that you can't ever find that in any book. It grows to about 4 or 5 feet high even, and so it makes a good background. It has a flower that's probably 2 to 3 inches across. Looks like a double daisy type of thing, or calendula almost.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bright yellow.
And it blooms this time of year or in spring? Or
It just started blooming.
Okay.
Within the last week or two. And it'll bloom pretty much all over, and it seems to spread by itself, not fast, but gradually.
Clump?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
I think we have one place in one of the gardens we've had for probably 10 years, which has grown from a relatively small clump, and it's probably about 4 feet across in the clump, but it stays in the same area. It grows into separate types of things, but it isn't. It's just beautiful. I don't know whether it came from I'm 90 years old, and I've seen it around in our gardens for forever. It seems like.
I'm wondering if it isn't a helianthus or heliopsis of some kind.
Rudbeckia.
Oh, a Rudbeckia. Okay.
Rudbeckia.
Yeah, there is a Golden Globe Rudbeckia now that I come to think of it with that is a double.
And that gets 6 to 8 feet high.
Is that about?
It gets high, and it makes a beautiful background, and it keeps blooming for quite a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of hairy leaves?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
They're kind of, not real spread. They're fairly big leaves, almost like a daisy type.
Yeah, that's probably it. It's a type of black-eyed Susan. Rudbeckia is the genus name.
I shall try. We've got so many people that have been wanting to find it, someplace. Okie doke. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Rudbeckia would be my guest, too.
Yeah.
Tom, yeah.
It's one I haven't seen for a while, I guess, but yeah.
Well, and she said it was been in the family, Elizabeth said it's been in the family for 30 years or whatever, so been a long time. Tom in Sextonville, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Thanks. I've got three or four young white pine trees that are maybe 4 feet tall that I planted a couple of years ago as maybe five-year transplant seedlings, and they are a sickly-looking yellow color, worse this year than last year, and yet the other white pines near it that are in the same screen line look very healthy. There's just certain ones that look very sad, and I have sprayed them with Captan, thinking it might be a fungicide problem, but no results.
Okay, so you're saying that these are some of a seedling batch that are looking...
Yep, yep.
Okay, all the same age, all treated the same.
Yep.
Okay, that is the chronic mystery that I always call the mystery of the three arborvitaes, because it always seems that someone will call in with, you know, five plants of the same age, they've treated them the same, why are some of them not growing as well as the others? And it may have to do with... individual genetics. It may have to do with something in the soil in those particular areas. Might have something to do with the root system. There could be something attacking the root system there. If they're separated by distance from any of the others, then I always suspect something like possible herbicide injury or something like that. Have you looked at the bases of the trees? There hasn't been anything like rabbits chewing at them, has there?
Nothing that I can...
See anyway. Okay.
And if I look at the growth, the buds that are in place on most of these for next year, these are really anemic looking, these three or four individuals, as opposed to the other ones.
Yeah.
Which show good promise.
Are they in the, you're saying they're in the same line too with the others?
Actually, this is an L-shaped screen line, but it's at the tail end of the garden. The only difference that I can think of at all is that it's in cultivated soil, or at least soil with no weeds or grass around it. Whereas the others are actually kind of in a sodded area.
So the ones in the sodded area or the cultivated area are not doing well?
Cultivated area.
And
figures,
there are,
doesn't it?
Are they all together? Are they right next to each other?
They're separated by about 10 feet.
Oh.
Well, they're, yeah. The mystery of
the... The mystery continues.
Yeah, I would check those things, though. You know, check at the bottom of the color of the tree and make sure that voles or rabbits haven't been chewing at them. It could be something going on underneath the ground, that there might have been air pockets when they were planted.
Could be rocks under
there. Could be rocks, could be many different things.
I could pull some soil away and see if I can see anything on the roots or any kind of damage like that, but they really get a watchful eye.
Yeah, I bet they do. And there are some different kinds of insects that can attack at that collar level, so I would do that.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. I know we had that in our lawn with, and I don't even remember the plants now. We had two plants on either side of a little walkway. One was perfect, and the other one was a problem, and it just sort of anemic and dug down. And here was a cement paver that, you know, from years back that had been covered up over time by soil. And of course, I had to plant it right over the top.
Yeah, yeah.
top
oh,
of that.
Dear.
So there you had it. Sue and Polk, hi to you.
Yes. All of a sudden, in the last couple of weeks, the red-leafed maple trees in my yard have developed white spots on the leaves. The green-leafed maple trees seem to be fine, and they're all kind of interspersed. But the red-leafed maple leaves all have white spots. It kind of looks like somebody dropped milk on it. It's dry.
Okay. Is it talcum powder? Does it rub off?
Yes.
Okay. That sounds like powdery mildew. We've been actually having quite a bit of powdery mildew down here. It's a fungus that doesn't actually need a lot of moisture to thrive. In fact, it prefers humid weather, which is what we've had. So they, I know, are more susceptible to foliar diseases like that than your green-leafed varieties.
So that may be it.
That is.
What do you do with anything to do be done with that?
Well,
not really.
Not
is
a whole lot.
No.
Not for a tree-sized specimen, unless these are young trees.
No, they're very old.
They're old trees. Okay. I would try and keep them in good health. I don't know whether you've gotten a lot of water up there in Polk.
Not until yesterday.
Okay. All right. Try and keep the trees watered and fertilized, and hopefully that will eventually improve. And I would clean up the leaf litter at the end of the year. Don't use it to mulch your garden or anything because the spores will overwinter.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. And just last week, I think somebody gave a guideline for the amount of gallons of water versus the diameter of a tree.
Right.
Do you know that? I can't call that up. I think it's like 5 gallons per inch diameter.
I just got an email about that.
It'll come to us.
It'll, yeah.
We'll get it there because I thought that, that's a great way to be able to figure it out. Of course, then you have to remember.
Uh-huh.
I haven't remembered. Scott in Milwaukee, hi to you.
Hi. Actually, being a first-time homeowner, I'm not really used to dealing with outdoor plants, so I'll confine it to just two that I have here. Received as housewarming gifts an Asiatic tiger lily and just a plain potted daisy. Put them outside in concrete planters on the west side of the house, which gets a pretty good full view of the sun. There's no shade trees or anything like that on that side. And I didn't, unfortunately, keep them watered too terribly well. Again, mostly just because I'm not used to outdoor plants. The tiger lily snapped off in a strong wind, and I brought it in, repotted it, and kept it inside in indirect sunlight and intermediate watering now and then, just enough to keep the soil slightly moist but not damp. And that's sprouted a little bit. I see two shoots grassed in about 6 inches tall, but it hasn't really changed in some weeks, and I don't know whether that's actually the lily itself or not and what to expect out of that.
That sounds like it's the lily coming back. It will be using the reserves in the bulb to regrow itself. Sometimes they won't, and you'll have to wait until next year. But if you are getting a little bit of regrowth back, you should. They probably won't overwinter very well in a pot. They should be planted in the ground. And you should put them with the top of the bulb about 4 inches deep. So the bottom of the bulb is probably 5 inches deep.
Okay.
And, you know, keep it watered.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The daisy itself just seems to have been pretty well scorched. It's about two-thirds dead from the look of it, very little greenery left. And I don't know if this is salvageable or not because I don't have any experience with mum-type plants.
Okay, and I don't know whether it's an annual or a perennial, but my guess would be if you weren't watering, well, how big is the pot, I should ask?
The planter is probably about 12 inches in diameter.
12 inches. Well, you probably should have been watering it at least once a week, if not twice.
Okay.
Depending on, you know, what side you have it on. It sounds like it was in pretty full sun. If it was pretty pot-bound, you might have needed to water it even more than that. I have some plants that we really need to water about every other day. So what I would do is I would take it out of the pot, take a look at the root system, see if there are any roots that look like they're white and living as opposed to brown and slimy or brown and crispy. And if there are, then you might be able to keep it going. But again, without knowing whether it's an annual or perennial. If it's perennial, it might be worth planting it in the ground. If it's an annual, probably not worth your time trying to regenerate it at this point.
Wonderful. Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. Someone else phoned in and wondered if that golden glow might have been a heliopsis, too. There's one in the Johnny's catalog from Albion, Maine that looked like it sounded like the description. So that's another possibility. And let's go to Jim and Muskego in just a minute. I just want to remind everybody, though, that you are listening to Garden Talk. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer on this, the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lots of things to talk about when it comes to the garden, and Lisa Johnson has some answers for us. So let's go back to Jim and Muskego and see what's on his mind. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, Lisa and Larry.
Good morning.
I have a question. We're back to trees again. I have a question on my Austrian pines. I planted them about 25 years ago, and they're starting to die back. A couple winters ago, I took one out that just literally lost its needles, stopped the new growth. Candles were dying back, and now another one's going that way, and I've got a couple others that are starting. Have you heard of anything going on with them?
Yeah, the big thing that goes on with them is a disease called Spheropsis shoot blight and canker. Well, it used to be called Diplodia, then it was called Spheropsis, and now I've heard it's back to Diplodia again.
Okay.
So you might be able to find it under either name.
Diplodia, D-I-P-L-O?
Yeah, okay. And it's one of the most common fungal diseases that we have, and unfortunately it's been a big problem on Austrian pines.
Okay.
They used to be one of the pines that I would recommend the most because they're urban tolerant. Beautiful trunk and so on. But this Spheropsis causes brown shoot tips,
yes.
A lot of resin flow.
Yes.
And then they produce these little tiny black fruiting bodies on the needles.
Okay.
Unfortunately, and I hate to tell you this, but there isn't really much of a cure for this.
That's what I was going to ask next, as
yeah,
a matter of fact.
I was afraid you were going to ask that next.
Yeah,
it's just a shame to see them go. I mean, they're 18, 20 inches in diameter at the base.
I
mean, they're beautiful trees.
And, you know, particularly, it's like with the Colorado blue spruce, when we tend to see Cytospora canker getting them, it's usually at the point when they've just reached their most beauteous and they're, you know, 20-some years old.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing this on Austrian pine at many, many different ages and stress levels and so on. What you do is, you know, if possible, and it sounds like this is a large tree, is that you prune the branches back 6 to 8 inches from where you see the needle browning.
Mm-hmm.
And you make sure that you dip your pruning shears in either rubbing alcohol or that you use some kind of spray on it, like Lysol spray, which
mm-hmm.
contains about 70% rubbing alcohol.
Okay.
And then just destroy that material.
Yeah.
Particularly, we're going to see that on stress trees. So if you're in one of the droughtier areas, keep them watered. That'll help.
Sure.
But I'm afraid the prognosis isn't real good.
Yeah, and the size of those trees would be almost impossible to trim back, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're basically clay and rocks, so it's been pretty dry.
Yeah.
And does it transfer, you know, to any other? I have some ponderosa and some red pine, which seem to be okay.
Red pines can be a problem. Scots pines. Yes, Scots pines particularly.
Okay.
Some of the other cypresses, firs, spruces, junipers.
Larches too, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I don't think larches is on the
good.
List.
Okay. All right.
But, I'm not sure what to tell you. So if badly infected,
you
might want to take it down.
Answered it. I didn't know what was happening on there. It seemed to be just, you know, going downhill for
mm-hmm.
the last several years now. And, I'm going to be losing 4 or 5 trees that are pretty good sized. And I just want to make sure that if there's anything we can do at all, I'd like to, you know, try and save them.
Now, if you want to, you may need to get a commercial person to help you with this.
Sure.
But there are some fungicides. The problem is that you need to spray at 2-week intervals between bud break and full shoot elongation. So that's going to give you, you know, a few weeks full.
Got it.
And you're not the only one, too. This is actually something that's been gone across the country.
Oh, okay.
And it's affected the trees.
Wow.
The Austrian pines all the way across the country. It's really
amazing.
Too bad.
Really, true. Well, thank you so much, Lisa and Larry. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Sure. I'm also going to recommend we have a fact sheet at wihort.uwex.edu. That's our garden fact sheet series, and you can just scroll down to, I think they have it listed under Spheropsisil, which is Spheropsis.
All right. Thanks again, Jim, for calling. Vernon Appleton, your turn now. Hi, Vern.
Hello. Do you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. I have a question about tomatoes. I don't have any buds on my, flowers on my tomatoes. They're there, I noticed, but they're all shriveled up and kind of straw-like. Can you tell me why?
Are these in pots or in the ground?
They're in pots.
Okay. And how often are you watering?
About every day.
About every day.
Haven't been stressed, but one time.
Okay. And is there mulch on the soil?
No, there isn't.
Okay. What kind of soil is in the pots?
I just bought potting soil.
Okay.
This year, for most of them. There's some with the old one. I just added some on top of it.
What does the rest of the plant look like?
It seems kind of healthy. It's green. There is some yellow leaves at the near the bottom. And there's five plants, four are alongside each other, about 2 feet apart.
Mm-hmm.
And one is quite a ways away, about 20 feet.
Okay.
And they all got it.
All right. I'm guessing it's weather-related. I know that we have had some fruit abortion problems and blossom abortion problems due to temperature fluctuations. If it's, let's see, we had this not last year, but the year before when the overnight temperatures were not warm enough to get the fruit to initiate. So in that case, we were having blossoms but no fruit. In this case, you're saying all your blossoms are shriveling up.
Yeah, the first batch was good. In fact, I'm just getting some tomatoes off of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they're just starting to turn red. And there's quite a bit of them, but of course...
Yeah. The other thing could be a pollination problem. If you got plenty of bees and butterflies.
I don't notice that, but I don't notice any of them even blooming.
Yeah, okay. The tomatoes are also wind pollinated, so I'm thinking you shouldn't need any of that insect activity, but I'm just trying to think of what
you
else it could be.
You don't see any yellow flowers.
No yellow flowers at all.
Mm.
Okay, well then...
They'll be there, but they don't open, you know.
Okay.
And then they're still hanging there, but they're very straw-like, and it's never been a complete open flower.
Yeah.
I am not sure what's going on there.
Wow.
That's,
it
could
sounds
be a variety
like,
of things.
Yeah, it sounds like something weather or temperature related, though, is my guess.
The other ones come through just fine, the first batch, you know.
Uh-huh.
Now, last year and the year before, I had a problem with them bursting open at the bottom of the plant. And that was
the tomatoes.
Eggshell. Yeah, the tomato.
Okay.
And I put eggshells in them this year, and I've had no problem with that at all.
Calcium.
Calcium.
Is it Lyme deficiency?
No, it's it isn't necessarily a calcium deficiency in the soil. It's a problem with the plant being able to take up enough calcium and get it into the fruit. Usually you see that when you have a lot of fluctuation in moisture levels. But you sound like you've been watering very consistently.
Oh, yeah.
So that shouldn't be happening.
And I have none of that problem.
This year,
just no flowers.
I wish we could help you out, Vern, but I think we've exhausted our possibilities.
If it is temperature there, you'll just have to wait until it
gets better. Until it gets better. Thanks, Vern. Thanks for calling. Jack in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Jack.
Hi there. 100 years ago, I used to be a volunteer for the Extension Service and used to spend my Saturdays handing out literature. Now I'm looking for a piece of it.
Okay.
I want to pass on to somebody I know, some information on how to get a Kalanchoa to rebloom as a houseplant.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm familiar with it. Those can be a little bit tricky. I've met people that either have no problem getting them to rebloom or they can't get them to rebloom for anything. I was reading a little bit of information about that not too long ago, where they said that, you know, after it blooms, you cut off the old flowers, and I think you're supposed to cut back on the fertilizer. Are you coming up with anything there, Larry?
No, I'm just looking myself just to see, and I'm not coming up with anything either here.
Well, how about a publication sheet? We used to have these things to hand out to people.
I don't think Wisconsin has anything on Kalanchoe, but if you call the Dane County Extension Office, I can probably come up with something for you.
Well, I called the... publication number yesterday and got nowhere.
Yeah,
that there's they're not in Madison anymore.
About.
Yeah, I'm sure they didn't because there isn't a publication on Kalanchoe.
I mean, everybody's seen Kalanchoas.
Yeah, you would
it's
think
one of
so.
Those
but
popular plants out.
But if you call our county office in Dane and leave a message for me, I'll get you something sent out for that. Because I know I did see something about that, and I put it in one of my files, and unfortunately it's not been retained in my brain.
And what's your number? How does he reach you?
608-224-3715. 3715. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. And let's go to Joanne in Fitchburg next. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, Larry.
Sure.
Larry, I have another question. Is, are you people going to have any open house this year at the Mineral Point Research Station?
Oh, the Ag Station. Yeah.
Ag Station?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. August 18th, I believe. That's the Saturday. They have their usual field day. And they have vegetable tasting, they have children's activities, they have, you can look at all the trial gardens with the vegetables, mm-hmm. they have seminars. It's a really great time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they have master gardeners there, too.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to go, because of the master gardeners and some other specialists there. I have a question, Lisa. Is about 6 weeks ago, I planted two packets of seed in two different areas in the garden. And have been watering it every day, but one area I got nothing but ryegrass, and in other area there is nothing.
And what was the seed that you planted?
Sunflower seeds.
Sunflower seeds, okay.
From one of the catalog companies, and another one is a bee balm, which is a Monarda.
Right, right.
I was told they are hardy, they can come up. But nothing has come up, and I'm wondering whether I should keep on watering or just forget about it, plant something else there.
Well, the sunflower seeds, of course, are not perennial here, and it's getting a little late in the year to put them in and still be able to get flowers, but they should have come up. You followed the directions as far as depth and
right.
so on?
Right.
Okay. Usually the sunflowers take about 7 to 10 days. Now, the Monarda, I've never grown from seed, so I don't have at the top of my tip of my tongue here how long that's supposed to take before it germinates.
Well, again, catalog company said 6 weeks, and because I did it in early part of June, the nights were still cool, and we didn't have the drought. So, you know, she said give it 6 weeks or plus minus 2 weeks. So it's it has been about 8 weeks now, and I don't see any life of sunflower or the Monarda. Monarda may be one or two plants, but the most of it is ryegrass.
Huh, that's very interesting. I'd say the sunflowers, for whatever reason, whether something ate them or whether they rotted, or I'm not sure. It doesn't sound like that's going to...
You're not going to get sunflowers.
No, not this year.
No, I didn't expect to get the bloom, but at least if the plant came up, then I could, you know, have something next year, because these are supposed to be perennial.
Oh, okay, so yes, there are some. I was thinking of the... large flowered sunflowers,
No, these are perennial dwarf sunflowers.
Okay, gotcha. Well, maybe contact the company and tell them what happened and
see what they have to say, and they might even be able to send you some more.
Yeah.
I'd give that a shot. Thanks very much, Joanne, for calling. Appreciate it. Patricia in Madison, we go to you next. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have some information on the Kalanchoes.
Oh, good.
And this is from Circular 511, revised June 1958 from the Extension Service.
Wow.
That's impressive.
Well, it has about flowering potted plants and mm-hmm. how you can get them to bloom again. And for the Kalanchoes, it says, by removing old flowers, mm-hmm. Kalanchoes normally bloom a second time in late winter. To keep plants growing so they'll flower again next year, set them in a bright, relatively warm location. Like poinsettias, Kalanchoes need a long, uninterrupted night to form flower buds.
Oh,
boy, that's going
to
be tough.
So if you want to put them in closets each night.
Yeah, that's... I remember my dad used to, who worked in this building, used to be able to get them... to reflower without any effort on his part. And I always wondered how that happened, but it must have been in just the right place to get it to go.
He had a green thumb, I think.
Yep. Apparently.
Thanks, Patricia.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. All right, out of Norman in Wausau. Hi, Norm.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'd like to ask your guest a question about peach trees, if I could.
Oh, boy.
I have two of them. One is it's second summer now, and the other is its third summer. The older one finally has five peaches on it this year. But both of them, in the first year that I've had them now, they have these small little blossoms, and I never see any pollinating insects on them. And they get little tiny nubbins on them, and then the whole works falls off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, is that normal, and what's supposed to pollinate them, if anything? And then is that a function of how old they are? Because this older one is the one that actually finally retained a few.
Yeah, it definitely can be related to age. With apples, for example, it can take 2 to 7 years for you to get a crop on a standard apple. Are these dwarf peaches?
They're dwarf.
Okay, they are. Okay.
They don't look dwarfs, though, because the first one, the one that's a three-year-old, is about, I'd say, about 10 feet high, 9, 10 feet high.
Was that a graft?
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are, well, like on the pears are far less reliable as far as dwarfing as opposed to apples. And I think it's the same situation on peaches where you don't always get the dwarfing effect that you're looking for. But in any case, with your fruit trees, you can get early precocious crops that the tree is not quite prepared to bear, and so those do fall off early. Can I ask again where you're from?
I'm from Wausau, although I'm in kind of a rather sheltered place.
You must be. I was like, Wow, he has one that's 3 years old. I'm impressed.
I'm in a woods above the Wisconsin River.
Okay.
The garden and orchards in this woods. And then the second thing I do is I trench it for the winter. I put them down into a trench and actually physically cover them.
Wow.
Which takes a couple hours putting them down and a couple hours back. But
I imagine. Okay.
That's what you have to do if you want them to survive, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Unless you know a better way.
Nope.
not that I can. If you had a really protected area, like in a courtyard, you might be able to. But you're pretty high up there in the state. I'm just amazed that you've been able to get them to grow.
Those buds, those blossom buds, that's normal for them to just form those little nubbins and fall off. Usually,
For young trees. They can have that kind of problem. The thing I'm wondering about, though, is whether that's pretty major surgery to the root system every year, and I'm wondering whether they are able to come up with enough resources from the root system to be able to produce...
Well, here's the thing. I only take off a fraction less than one quarter of the roots on one side. I mean, I take off like a quadrant, a quarter of it, just that one side that I'm going to tip it down to, and I actually underdig it a little bit, and so the surrounding roots just kind of collapse into it, but they're not disconnected. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in spring, I bring it up, and it's really just, let's say, one root that would go to the direction that I put it in that trench that I'm actually cutting off. You follow what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
So most of the roots, I'd say 75 to 80%, and the tree does phenomenal. I mean, It has a lot of good-looking leaves on it, a lot of green branches, but not many peaches.
What is your fertilizing like?
I didn't do very much, to be honest with you.
Well, that's good. With fruit trees, you typically don't want to do a lot of fertilizing because that can give you a lot of great-looking leaves at the expense of fruit. So I was wanting to check on that, too. Fruit drop can also be caused by things like temperature, incomplete pollination. So there are a number of things that could be causing that. But since they're young trees, I guess I wouldn't really worry about it too much.
See what happens next year, right?
Yeah. Give it a couple more years.
Good luck, Norm.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. A couple more years and then they may succumb.
Always is that the one publication our fruit specialist won't have to write is how to prune the mature peach tree.
Peach tree. Yep. I've heard Terrell Roper say that. Rick in Milwaukee. Your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi, good morning. I am interested in the concept of a rain garden, and I wondered if you could talk a bit about that and how one might establish something like that on a city lot in Milwaukee.
Great. Well, first of all, I'm going to recommend a couple of publications that we have out there on the Extension website. That's at the Learning Store. Well, actually not the, just learningstore.uwex.edu.
Okay.
And we have some really nice publications out there that explain how to put a rain garden together. Basically, what you need is a swale-type area, particularly if it's off of your downspout or someplace that's a little bit wet in your yard. Those are the ideal places to put those in. And the publication explains how deep you should make it, what kind of slope you should put it at so that it best retains the water. Most of the plants that you would be using would be those that are prairie plants. And even though I know what your clay is like there in Milwaukee County, because I worked there for 3 years, you should still be able to grow some of those plants.
Can it be done without native plants?
It can. There are some plants that come from or evolved in areas that either have, you know, high water for some of the year and low water some of the year that you can use. I think most of the publications that have been put out so far are using native plants. But if you did some research on it, I think you could probably come up with some others as well.
Okay, one brief question, not on this so much, although maybe horseradish would work as part of a rain garden. I'm wondering if horseradish is easy to grow as a perennial here in Milwaukee. And if so, can any portion of the horseradish root work for the, as a foundation? Hello?
As a foundation?
You know, as the...
the rain garden foundation.
Oh, I see.
Not necessarily. Well, you know, that would be an interesting idea. Mm-hmm. But I mean, to start the plant, how, you know, to bury any portion of a root, would that start a plant? Or does it have to be the crown?
It'll certainly work better with the crown. I haven't tried it actually with, it's a big taproot. I haven't tried propagating it, without a crown. So I'm not certain it would work.
And once you get it, you're not going to get rid of it very fast.
Yeah, it's a bugger to dig out.
In a shaded area?
Oh, well, a shaded area, that's... You still probably will have it. If it's heavy shade, no, that's not going to work out very well.
How fast does it migrate in a couple of years by itself?
Well, let's see. I'm trying to remember from my own experience with it at a previous home.
I have not grown it.
I have, and it grew, it spread pretty rapidly.
Well, I mean, inches or a
feet.
Foot? Huh. Oh, it sounds like it'd be a lot of food.
You're going to have plenty of horseradish, believe me. If you have conditions like I had in my garden, I finally actually had to chemically remove them.
Roundup?
Yeah, because it was the only way to get rid of them.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest on Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller with my guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Finally, we have some open lines again. I haven't given the number in a long time, so let me do that right now. If you'd like to join in, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, and we'll get you on pretty quickly. Let's go to Diane in Athens next. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about cucumbers and my zucchini plants. I've never had this on them before. They're just covered with a powdery mildew, and the leaves are just brittle. I mean, the plants are not producing because they're in such distress.
Mm-hmm.
What is that caused from? Like I said, I've never had it in my garden before. These are plants that I bought and I didn't start these plants from seeds. So do you think that they came from a greenhouse or where they were started?
Well, it's entirely possible. Mm-hmm. It's also possible that the weather patterns that we have added to
problem.
That. Yeah, mm-hmm. And also, if you haven't had it before on any of your cucurbits, you're lucky, actually, because it's quite common on squash and... Yes, it does. You want to remove the material in fall and not use it in your compost.
Okay. Would it help to keep pulling all those leaves off of there?
No, not much. If it's really interfering with the harvest and the growth of the plant, you might have to resort to a spray of some kind. Possibly... I can't remember whether Daconil is labeled for that, but you need to check and make sure that powdery mildew and the crop, the cucumber or the squash, is listed on the label.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Diane. Thanks for calling. Dave in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Good show today.
Thanks.
I have a planter that runs along the front of my house. It's a brick house, and then the planter is also brick. It's probably... maybe 25 feet long and about a foot wide. The plants that I have in there, it seems like I water it up, every day or every couple of days, but they just aren't growing that well. And the soil seems to get real dry. I'm wondering what I can do to kind of maintain some of the soil or moisture content in there, or what plants I could plant that like dry.
Okay, I was just about to suggest, before you suggested it yourself, that you need to change the type of plants in there, because that's a very narrow planter, and the bricks are going to be absorbing heat during the day, and you're going to have trouble maintaining things in there, except for things like sedums. So you might want to put maybe sedum... I think Autumn Joy might get a little bit big for that, but... hens and chicks, moss roses, if you wanted to put some annuals in there that would keep blooming. The moss roses will take that kind of environment pretty well.
Moss roses or sedums?
Yep, and you could do them both.
And what?
You can do them both if you'd like.
Would that give me some color? Because I'm looking for some color in there, too.
The moss roses definitely will.
Okay.
And those will often reseed, so you may not have to reseed them too often. And there are a number of sedums that have purple leaves. There's Postman's Pride, there's Xenox, Blackjack, number of those.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, that could be pretty nice. Mm-hmm. Look pretty nice. Vicki in Menominee, Michigan. We'll go to you now. Hi, Vicki.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling to find out about what we can do with our asparagus patch. We have a wonderful asparagus patch. It's probably 35 to 40 years old, and we get tons of asparagus, but we fight constantly with the weeds, and the weeds by the end of the season basically overtake the asparagus so that we end up mowing them down and letting the asparagus come through from there, that point on. And the patch is quite large, and we don't all have, especially me, I don't always have time to weed. And I can't keep up with the weeds.
Sure. What kinds of weeds do you have in there? Do you know, are they
everything.
Perennial or, okay.
I don't know if they're, I'm sure they're perennial. They're the same type that you get on a farm.
They usually come up before the asparagus, though, in the spring, don't they?
For the most part, I suppose they start then, yes.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, if it's, perennial weeds, then we might take a different tack than if it's annual weeds. But if you've got a mixture of both, you might want to try a product like Preen. There is a Preen that's labeled for vegetable gardens. And you have
really?
To, yeah. And since, with the asparagus, you're not trying to get seeds and you're working off of roots that are... that are already there, it shouldn't be affected. But you need to, again, check the label and make sure that asparagus is on that label. What this is, you have to put it on early in the season, is it's a what we call a pre-emergent, and it will keep seeds from germinating. It would work against things that are not perennial, that don't already have roots in the ground. So if you did have something like quackgrass, it's not going to help. But if you do have something that seeds in there as an annual, it would work against that. I think that's probably your best bet, that and mulching.
Mulching as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I know that's going to be hard because you start the season, you know, you put a little bit of soil on, and, you know, when you're doing, I don't know if you're still trenching or whether you're just at the stage where you can, you know, just harvest as it is. If you're at the stage where you can just harvest as it is,
well,
maybe try mulching.
The patch is 35 years old.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I remembered you said that, and I thought, well, you might still be adding stuff.
What about applying an herbicide for those perennials before, you know, as they're small and before the asparagus breaks the ground?
You could do that.
You could get rid of some that way.
Right, right. So,
one would you recommend for that?
Oh, boy, there are so many different products out there. I would ask at your local garden center, since I'm not sure exactly what they're carrying, see which one they would recommend for that.
My neighbor had told me a while, quite a few years ago, maybe 10 years ago, that he used to use something, but he doesn't remember what it was. He said he sprinkled it on. He never had a weed.
Okay, that's probably a pre-emergent product like that, like Preen. You know, you could also try if you were interested. Well, nah, never mind. No, I think that's probably the best option.
But you could, you could even use Roundup on those weeds as they first come up.
That we did, But it just didn't seem to keep them at bay for the whole season.
Okay, the Preen idea is a really good one, I think.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
I'll try that. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Good luck with that.
Thanks for calling. And Jim in Eau Claire, you're next. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Actually, I'm on the road coming back from Ashland. I just went through Drummond, so I'm on the road.
Okay.
Question about raspberries. I had a patch of several years ago that died out, and now this year it came back in two corners, so I got a couple of little spots growing up. Now, how can I get that back in the rows?
Well, you'd have to transplant them.
Any technique to that I need to know?
You could probably best do it in spring. And, you know, you try and keep as many of the roots together as you can.
Just dig out in clumps.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well,
give it a
thought. Go ahead.
I'd probably, again, do it in spring when the soil moisture is better than we have now.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. And are the Japanese beetles that bad every year? They are really bad this year, I think.
Yeah, I've been hearing some reports from various areas that they seem to be pretty bad this year, but I'm afraid we're still on the upward part of the bell curve. I haven't heard anything that we're nearing the top yet, so they'll probably get worse before they get better.
Okay, one quick question about blackberries.
Mm-hmm.
I found a patch alongside the highway, a really large patch, and I'd like to take some of them home. Can I put them near the raspberries, or should I keep them quite a ways away?
Oh, now that's a good question.
One thing, make sure that the land that you're digging them up on is not somebody's land itself.
It's road right away.
Okay.
And it's a secret where it is.
I would try and keep them a little ways away. There are some diseases that can possibly be passed.
And I dig them up and transplant them the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, spring. Okay, thanks.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Karen in Shorewood, your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
Thank you. I also have a question about a raspberry patch. We transplanted some raspberry plants last spring into a plot on our yard, and the plants did very well, and we got some raspberries, but the plants stayed very small. They were from my father-in-law's raspberry patch, which is really well established. Now, this spring, our raspberry plants came back great, really vigorous. The plants are very large and very healthy, but I know they're biennial flowering plants. There's absolutely no raspberries at all. And my father-in-law's raspberry patch has fruit every year. Is this the kind of thing we should wait one more year and just see if we get some fruit?
Yeah, I would wait one more year.
Okay. Is there a reason why, you know, his patch would flower, have berries every year? Does it just need to become better established?
Yeah, I suspect that that's probably the reason.
Okay.
You may have also had some predation. Do you have a lot of Japanese beetles in your area?
No.
Okay, oh, that's good.
Yeah. We didn't even have any flowers.
Okay.
You know, so that's why we knew we weren't going to get any berries. Yeah.
Okay. Well, usually the raspberries, when you first plant them, these are the summer bearing types.
Mm-hmm. Well,
or are they the
August, September?
Oh, okay. So they're the.
You know, to compare my father-in-law's patch and these plants came from his patch, he already has been getting berries.
Right.
And he'll get them straight through till frost. So.
Okay. Now, the summer-bearing ones, you usually will have the first year, you have what they call a primacane that has no berries on it, or no flowers. Second year, you have a floricane that does have flowers. But typically, the autumn-bearing raspberries are floricanes every year. So I guess I am a little surprised that you haven't had any. Is it in full sun?
For about 6 hours a day.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We'll ponder that.
Yeah.
Let's think about that. We'll be taking a break and we'll ponder it and come back to that question with Lisa Johnson. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Lots of things to talk about with her. Raspberries are on our agenda. We'll talk about sunflower seeds. Hostas come to mind as well. Maybe something, maybe an update on the emerald ash borer as well. So there are lots of things we can talk about, not only in the flower garden, but the vegetable garden. We can talk about trees and shrubs and even the lawn with Lisa. So we hope you'll join in with your questions. And to do that, pretty easy, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. We'll be back right after the news. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. Glad to have you listening in. Lisa Johnson, our guest today, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. And join us with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And Lisa, we have Karen from Shorewood Online who has planted some raspberries a year ago, fall bearing, and they should flower every year, but she didn't get any flowers this year.
I'm wondering if she, did you mow them down last fall?
We did.
You did. Okay.
Was that a mistake?
Well, for an early planting,
okay.
It might be. That's the only thing I can think of that would have caused it.
And that's what I was wondering, too, after I read about them. What would be your advice for this fall?
I guess I would leave the stems up this fall and see what happens next year. Once they start flowering, you should be able to, you know, take them out in the fall and not have a problem.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. Virginia in Janesville, it's your turn now. Hi, Virginia.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just have a comment about the lady who had called earlier about the sunflower seeds.
Yeah.
I had a whole plot staked out. I was going to have this beautiful sunflower garden. I planted 4 packs, and the squirrels ate every one of them. So maybe that's why she didn't get any results.
Ah, that's a good point.
Something.
They like sunflower seeds.
What would you do to prevent them from doing that?
Oh, boy. If you have a real bad squirrel problem, you might want to sprinkle something on the soil. You could try. There are a number of products. I'm trying to think of the one that my office mate doesn't like me to use because apparently it gets on my clothes when I spray it.
I had tried pepper. People had told me to sprinkle pepper, and I put that on the soil,
cayenne.
And that didn't help at all. I think it just flavored it for them.
Okay, it's not Deer Vic. I'm not thinking of the name of the product. But I would think any of those repellents, Ropel,
okay.
you might want to try. I remember we were using chicken grit a couple of years ago with bulbs. Mm-hmm. It's possible. I know that the sunflower is only, you know, you're only putting them about an inch deep. But
right.
you might want to put some chicken grit on the surface of the soil, see if that helps.
Okay.
And then,
I was really disappointed because
yeah.
I had this, you know, the different heights and different colors.
Oh,
and
everything. Man.
I thought, oh, this is going to be so beautiful. And I looked out my window, and they were just chewing away.
Oh, that's sad.
So, well, I ended up just putting something different there, so it worked out okay. So, but I just thought maybe next year I'll try it again and try and beat the squirrels to it.
Yeah, darn right. those
okay,
squirrels.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Dave in Oak Creek, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good.
I'm quite a hosta aficionado. Mm-hmm. I'm a collector, and I hybridize.
Oh,
and,
great. I'm a hostaphile, too.
Excellent. I love to hear that. Hostavirus X.
Oh.
The X problem.
Yes.
I have a lot of friends, a lot of relatives. They go to the different the garden centers or the big stores that have the garden centers. And a lot of the stuff that I see come out of there is rife with HVX or the symptoms of HVX. And I'm just curious, is there anything that can be done to stop them from selling these plants that are, I mean, I know that they can only sell what they get from their suppliers, but even when you point it out to a manager or something of that nature, either they don't know or they don't care.
Okay, well, we do have inspectors from DATCAP that go around to nurseries around the state. And, you know, those are people from the Department of Ag and check for that sort of thing.
Okay.
So I would think that you could get in touch with one of those folks and see if there's anything that can be done.
And if you find it, call them and tell them, too.
Right.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, I suppose that takes care of it then.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And it's a nasty disease that has to be.
Yeah, yeah, it's terminal, and it is unfortunately becoming more prevalent. And I don't think people are necessarily aware of the signs and the symptoms. It, typically, when you see some, and of course there are other diseases that can cause the same sort of looking symptoms. Kind of striping or spotting of leaves. If you see something that looks really weird in terms of variegation, that could be Hostavirus X.
Mm.
And I know they were doing or able to send it for testing from the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, but I'm not sure they actually do the testing there for it.
Okay. Let's go to Judy and Boyd next. Hi, Judy.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. We have some flowers. We can't even hardly get down to water them because the bumblebees are so bad. What can we do about it?
Wow.
I know bees have to go there and stuff. But, I mean, we can't water them. We can't get a chance to pick them.
Okay. Well, you can go either early in the morning before the bees come out or after sunset when the bees are kind of done for the day. That's one non-chemical alternative.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, are there some nests nearby that ground nesting? Okay. Are these mints or what kind of flowers are they?
They're impatiens and jumping johnnies and some daisies.
Wow.
Wow. Usually I don't see too many bees around impatiens. Or...
I wonder if you got a ground nesting bee there.
Yeah, something.
Could be.
Yeah.
Is there something that we could spray around underneath?
Well, there are various products that you can put in the nest if you need to go that way. But what you need to do is kind of watch the bees and see where they're coming from.
Okay.
I hate to, you know, advise, you know, killing off pollinating insects, but when
right.
they're, you know, places where children or people might accidentally stumble into the nest, certainly we don't want that.
Right, exactly.
But the early morning or evening is really the time to go out there, and if you're going to cut flowers, at least. Yeah.
All right.
You won't find them out there then.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Judy, for calling. Kathy in La Crosse, hi to you.
Hi. I have a recommendation for the gentleman that had a brick planter that was long and narrow.
Right.
I've had very good success using soil moist in areas like that. In fact, the ultimate test would be a concrete cemetery urn that is in the sunshine all day long, never sees shade. I planted moss roses in it and asparagus fern. It never dries out.
Yeah, that is one product that you can use. And I have used it myself in the past in an area that was under an eaves but on the south side of the house and was next to a sidewalk that got salted in the winter. So it was not good growing conditions. And I did put that product in. I've been a little leery of using it, though, ever since I read a report on the it was a study that was done. Now, the thing is, I have not read any corroborating reports, so I'm not sure how much weight to give this, but just to put this out there, that there is, while the material itself is safe, there is a breakdown material that it can form that's a carcinogen. So I haven't been recommending it ever since that, and I've got like 3 unopened cans that now I don't know what to do with.
I should tell you, too, the last time I put this in. I plant this urn every year. It's in a family cemetery plot. It's 3 or 4 years ago that I put it in. It's still working.
Yeah, the polymer lasts a long, long time.
And the plants are beautifully healthy. We did try geraniums in there, too. They do okay, but they're not as prolific as what the moss roses are.
Yeah.
They get just fabulous. And they do very well with that product. And then, of course, I use a very good potting soil mix, too.
That makes a difference as well,
and every time I get to that cemetery, I do fertilize it with, you know, like Miracle-Gro or something. But that's few and far between, probably maybe once a month it gets it, you know. So anyway, that's just something that gentleman could try.
Yeah, that's
a
great suggestion.
And I know my friends have had good luck with hanging baskets, too.
Yeah, it works really well in hanging baskets, too, any kind of container.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Kathy.
You're quite welcome.
Bye-bye. Appreciate that call. Okay, Beth in Mindoro, it's your turn now. Hi, Beth. Beth, are you there? Maybe we lost Beth. Okay, let's try Jim in Caledonia. Jim, hello to you.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about asparagus. I put some in this spring, 20 plants, and it came up, and it's been growing fairly well. And I was gradually filling in the trenches as it grew. Now, in the last 2 weeks, I noticed that the ferns seem to be drying out. It looks like I'm losing half the plants. I don't know. I've been watering it every other day. I fertilized it originally with Milorganite, and I've been doing Miracle-Gro. I think I've done it twice so far this year. I don't know if that'll come back, if the asparagus will come back, or if I'm losing them, or what's going on.
Well, it should come back. Have you seen any insects in the area?
No.
No, okay.
No, it looks like it's drying out right at the top where the little tiny little ferns are.
And then does it proceed down the plant, or is it just the tops that are drying?
It does seem to work its way down the plant, yeah. And then my wife said she noticed the neighbor's asparagus was doing the same thing. Now, his is planted in a garden. Mine is in a bed. It's in a 4-by-8-foot bed, so...
It doesn't sound like any disease I'm familiar with. I'm afraid you stumped me there.
Oh, my. I didn't mean to do that.
Sorry, we can't help you with that one, Jim. Well, maybe something will come to mind, or maybe somebody else will call in and have an idea about it.
Fine. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Rick in Eagle River, your turn. Hi, Rick.
How you doing?
Good.
I have 2 questions. First of all, my radishes. I don't get any bells on the bottom of my radishes. All they got is like a enlarged stem is as much as I can get. and they're full grown. In fact, the leaves are starting to turn yellow and stuff already, and I've given them plenty of water because it's so dry up here, and I just can't figure it out. Out of maybe 50 radishes, I'll get two of them that'll mature to full size.
Wow.
Okay, and these are ones that you've planted in the spring or that you're planting now?
No, from seed. From
okay.
seed, I just put them in my garden area there, and they came up and, you know, sprouted, and I thinned them out and so on and so forth, but they just don't seem to get any bells on them.
Okay, now when you've planted them in the spring, have you had the same problem?
This is the first batch.
Ah, okay. Right now is not a great time for seeding radishes. You might want to wait until it gets a little cooler out and try it again.
Right.
Also, make sure that they're deep enough.
Well, when I first planted them, it was, you know, cooler weather and everything. And I know a couple other people up here have got the same problem. Some have beautiful radishes. The other ones just don't seem to do anything. I don't know what the deal is. It's not fertilizer, and I'm not using the acid soil up here. I'm using more potting soil mixture with some other stuff.
And are you?
So
what about watering?
Watering, I water them religiously with my tomatoes and lettuce and zucchinis, which are another problem. You don't get any females, you get all males. And, you know, everything else is doing great. I've got tomatoes galore. I mean, I've just got tons of tomatoes.
I'm wondering if it isn't weather related somehow, temperature of the soil or something.
Okay, well, it could be.
Yeah, try them a little later in the season when it's a little bit cooler and see if that does any better.
And my next thing is I've got piles and piles of mulch from the leaves and pine needles and grass and everything else, all my clippings and stuff on a great big pile.
Mm-hmm.
Are those pine needles do anything to that mulch? I mean, do they give it a kind of a negative effect or anything? Or after they, like, the bottom of my pile is nice and black. I mean, it's rotted really good.
No,
those pine needles, are they okay in there? Or are they,
I don't know
if I should use them or not.
Yeah, go ahead and use them. And I'm assuming that the grass clippings that you haven't used any herbicide or anything.
No, they're fine.
Okay. In fact, they sell pine needles as mulch. So
what do you do?
I wouldn't think that would be a problem, especially since you've mixed it.
Yeah, there's oak leaves and popple and birch and pine needles and grass and
sounds
you
great.
Name it, it's in there.
That's a great mixture.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Thanks for calling. We've had some callers call in wanting to know the name of the product that the lady used in the cemetery for keeping the soil moist.
There's one called Soil Moist, actually. What they are is it's a little crystal, and when hydrated, it swells up to many times its size and maintains that water and then very slowly shrinks back down to its regular size. There are several different brands out there. Soil Moist is the one that I'm familiar with, but a lot of the garden centers have that. And I finally remembered it was Liquid Fence for the squirrels.
Liquid Fence.
Yeah. Ann doesn't like it when I spray that. She won't let me back in the office.
Someone else said on the asparagus question that we had with the weeds, corn gluten, would that be something you could try on?
Well, I was about to recommend that and then stopped myself because, at least in Wisconsin, it's not legal. It's not labeled as a weed control. It is labeled as a fertilizer. So you can use it as a fertilizer, but by law, I cannot recommend it as a weed control product.
Marion in Windsor, your turn. Hi, Marion.
A couple of things. Isn't one of the preens, doesn't that have the corn gluten in it? I just thought I read the label and said so. But anyway, what I'm really asking about is I'm wondering if Dane County is offering any of the master food preserver classes like I took several years ago and was very happy.
Extension is not actually, we're losing our food preserver agent.
Oh.
She's retiring, Pat Ludeman, and she's been with us for a number of years. Wonderful, wonderful lady.
Yeah.
I could, you know, check around and see if there are any others, but I'm not aware. I know that Extension isn't at this point.
Okay, well, that would be something to really consider for next year. If it's it's probably too late this year, but it was very, very good. I was very pleased with it. And I know another lady who took it and liked it, too, and there's some other people who are definitely interested. My second question is, do you know anything about rhubarb seed, how you keep it, or when to start it, or does it have to freeze in the winter and then start? I have collected some, and I was just wondering if you knew.
No, I have not had experience with rhubarb seed, just with the plants. I've never germinated it before.
My guess would be it would have to overwinter because...
Yeah, because it's a perennial.
It's a perennial.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Mary in Duluth, you're next. Hi, Mary.
Oh, hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I haven't been listening to the whole program. I've been in and out, but I just caught a little bit of the a call having to do with bees, and I believe your guest suggested that the person go out early in the morning or after the sun sets or something.
To pick the flowers so she wouldn't be bothered by the bees.
Right, and I said hallelujah. But then your your guest said, well, if all else fails, or if there's an, you know, someone has an allergy or whatever to bees, then possibly you might want to spray. Well, but I was all shook up because I've been hearing in recent months about seeing or hearing different little stories about how the bees are disappearing.
Yes.
And
the
so,
honeybees, not pardon? The honeybees, not bumblebees.
Oh, I see. It's strictly honeybees. But anyway,
right.
I don't know. I didn't look closely, but I saw a display at the Whole Foods Co-op in Duluth, and it said something about if you have a problem with wasps, and I'm thinking maybe it was referring to bees, too. I'm not sure. It said, here's a non-toxic alternative kind of spray. So I was just going to throw that out, that if people have problems, perhaps this spray that I noticed, you know, something that's non-toxic would be preferable in terms of whatever kind of bees. And I'm hearing
sure.
that the songbirds are disappearing, or their numbers are down. It just seems like, you know, everything is under threat, and so I just worry about using toxins in general.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out.
Thanks, Mary, and that's a good point. We try not to. I think, Lisa, you pretty much always go with the non-toxic methods.
Alternative first. Yeah, that's part
always
of integrated pest management is you use cultural methods, you use resistant plants, you try and site things properly and, you know, take care of them properly, water them, et cetera, in order to manage disease and insect problems.
Yep.
But, you know, sometimes if you do have, like we had a bee nest right outside the front door and we're having far too many run-ins, and eventually the bees had to be relocated chemically.
yep.
I hate to do that, but...
Sometimes you have to do it. Thanks, Mary. Thanks for calling. And Chris in Heartland, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I have a question about evergreens. About 2 months ago, I had a local garden center plant about five or six different evergreens, some Techne arborvitae, a Canadian hemlock, and a balsam fir. And they, you know, Heartland, the soil here is quite clay-like, and they just dug holes and plopped them in the ground. And then in another area, I bought some about one-foot little shrubs, evergreens also, that I put in another area, and I noticed that they came, the pot was completely sand. Should they have put sand there, you know, when they should have mended the soil in some way when they planted those 5-foot trees?
So you're saying the small trees that you planted were in sand?
Correct.
Or
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Normally with trees, we don't recommend amending the soil that you're planting into. But we do recommend that when you plant any kind of tree that you try and find the root flare, which is the area at the base of the trunk where the root system meets the trunk tissue and it flares out. And often this will require replacing some of the or taking out some of the soil. I would imagine that if a plant was had been grown in sandy soil and then was moved right into clay soil, you could have some problems there. So, yeah, they probably should have done that.
Yeah, they probably should have done something there.
Yeah.
It loosened the soil at least.
Mm-hmm, right, and you want to, particularly when you're planting plants that are come from containers, they're often pot-bound and the roots are circling around. So when you plant, you're trying to straighten out some of those roots first.
And flare them out.
Yeah, yeah. Right, so.
Thank you, Chris, for calling. Lisa, thank you. We'll look forward to another visit. Appreciate Okey-doke. It very much. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest on this edition of Garden Talk. And thank you very much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.